Hello, I'm Penina from Circle Care Services, and welcome to My BCBA Life. Circle Care Services is an ABA therapy agency, and we're all about giving BCBAs the support and community you're looking for. With this podcast, you're not on your own anymore. You're part of a BCBA community committed to making this world a better place to BCBA. Once this episode is complete, you'll be able to obtain a free CEU certificate for the clinical topic discussed. You'll need to confirm your attendance by taking note of the three surprise words I will drop throughout this episode. There is a link in the show notes below of a form that will ask you for your information and the surprise words that we need to generate your CEU certificate. Thank you, and let's get started. Welcome, Megan, to My BCBA Life. I'm so excited to have you here. I know you have a lot to offer. So if you can just start by sharing who you are and what you do as a BCBA now so that our audience can get a good idea of who they're about to listen to.
Sure. And thank you so much for having me today. I really appreciate it. My name is Megan Timko. I'm a BCBA and I have been for 21 years now. Currently, I am the Chief Operating Officer at Gradual Behavioral Health. And this is a kind of a new role for me, but I've done lots of different roles as BCBA and I've loved all of them equally.
Okay, so just to get an idea, what exactly are you doing now? Are you dealing more operational end? Are you working one-on-one with families? Where are you at?
So I am working more on the operational end, but for me, just this is personal preference as a BCBA. I do see families one-on-one, and I probably will as long as they'll let me, because I prefer to have a touch point to understand what the family and client experience is.
That's amazing. So I think that will bring us into the topic that we want to talk about today, which is preparing to be the right person for the job. And I think it's great to hear from someone who deals with it on the operation end, as well as still works with the families, so know what it's like, what the families need. So I'm just going to let you take me to what you think the right person for the job needs, what qualifications, and I'm excited to hear what you have to say.
Yeah, you know, I've spent a lot of time on this topic recently. We're in hiring mode at Gradual. And after a little bit of an absence from the clinical part of ABA, I came back. And in that time, the RBT became a thing. And a lot of other, I guess I would say like insurance mandates sort of swept across the United States. So a lot changed while I was away. And when I came back and I said it's time to do some hiring, I had to reacquaint myself with what is the landscape of workforce development look like in the field of ABA. And it was almost like a fire hose of information when I first sat down to really look at it. I wanted to do it the right way. I talked to people. I read every Reddit thread. I read every Facebook group. I read, you know, I don't even know, things people will just send me. And I educated myself on where we are and what is that person? What is the right person for the job? And I think it's a really complex answer. I think it's changed a lot from when I became a BCBA. And some of that's not bad. But I also think there's been sort of like the seesaw of the workforce grooming the field and the field grooming the workforce. And so, you know, who is the right person? I don't think there's one answer, but I think that everybody has to start thinking about how can I be a passionate player as a workforce member? And I think that is the driving force for both BCBAs, RBTs, and even for people in leadership who maybe don't even have those credentials.
That was a lot. I love that you like just the way you do things where it's not, okay, let's hire, okay, let's hire. It's like, okay, I love how you took that step back and tried to get an idea of what is happening, what's needed, because really, I'm saying, I think I touched upon this with you once, that the turnover, unfortunately, for RBTs could be pretty big. And
yeah.
I think that if we are really looking at the right people and are pushing the right people to come to the job, it might have a different ending. And I also think, and I think this is touching upon what you're saying, that when we work on the ourselves, if I'm applying to be the RBT, so I build myself to be the ideal RBT and not just do it, then that also will be
a very different story. So I'm curious for you, from the internal piece of, if a person is approaching their ABA job, RBT, from the RBT standpoint or the BCBA standpoint, what do you think is important for a person to step back and work on themselves? My first surprise word is shallow.
Well, I think one of the things is confidence that you both in yourself and that you are the right person for this job. You just said something about like just doing it, just coming and hiring anybody. I found that that's a thing now. And I was a little bit upset about it at first because it was almost like job open, human being, let's put those two things together. And while on the roulette wheel of things, you can find the right person, maybe every now and then, that's not a good way to hire into a position that is so people focused, that is so passion focused, and that has to do with the lives of other people. You know, when I've talked to all of these RBTs and even to some of the BCBAs that we're interviewing, there's a checklist of things I want to know in terms of, you know, do you have the degree? Do you have the experience? And those are important things. I personally, because my passion is people, I'm trying to feel, do they really want this job? Do they think this is a good fit for them as a person? Is this something that they're going to show up for? And I'm not talking about they walk through the door. Are they going to actually show up for this job? Sometimes the answer to that part right there is no, even though they've checked all of the things that creates a, quote, good candidate. And that matters. When you walk into a family's home or when a family walks into your clinic, the last thing they want to hear is this person checks all the boxes. And as a mother, if that's what I was given as the qualifications for somebody who was working with my child, I would be pretty upset. What everybody wants to hear is this person wants to be here doing this job with my child. And so that's what we hire for.
That's amazing. You know, it's really funny because we often have families who call us and will say, I want an experienced RBT. And sometimes we know that we're also like when we hire and we hire someone who's fresh, who has experience with kids. So, you know, it's not the first time they're meeting a child. They know how to talk to a child. They're very friendly. And we know that sometimes they do a better job than like what you said, someone who checks off the checklist. So we have to explain this to the parents. Like, listen, we could try to find you an experienced RBT, but based on the assessment that our BCBA did and met with your child, it looks like they need someone who is, you know, like you said, wants to be there, who gives it their all. And sometimes you get that from the not experienced. So mm-hmm. I think you know what it takes and you see an experienced RBT sometimes doesn't do a good job and you see a fresh person who has the right feelings, does the best job. So as a parent, that's obviously what you choose. And we find that we have to explain that to the family sometimes, that we're not just looking for experienced RBTs because we've had them and we found that they weren't doing such a good job. We are looking, like you said, someone who does our training, not with like a, you know, some, if an experienced RBT, we give great training, say, oh, I don't need this. That's not mm-hmm. great, you know?
No.
No. So it's really, I love that you pointed it out because yes, a person who has the qualifications are great, but a person who puts the feeling into the job is probably in a better place. And both is the best, right? Mm-hmm. So yeah. It's not like you said, like you want the person to meet the qualifications. You just want the person to care as well.
Yeah. And part of being a BCBA who has lasted in this field, which is, you know, not a lot of us have stayed around this long. Part of our mandate is how do we help people that are new in the field, both BCBAs and RBTs, find that feeling, right? We know for a fact that turnover and employee attrition is going to continue to happen, right? That's just generally healthcare. But in a field that is much almost closer in some ways than many areas of healthcare, how do we find people who can find that feeling and deliver it to our clients? You know, I have, you know, a personal story I tell sometimes. One of my kids has a very rare medical issue. And when we first found out about it, it was kind of a chaotic situation. And when the doctor came in the room, the doctor didn't look at me and say, I know 10 things about this condition. No, the doctor put everything down and sat down and looked at me and said, everything's going to be okay. And we're going to do this together. And I think about that moment all the time. This was about 10 years ago. And so I was, you know, I'd been a BCBA for a bit of time at that point. But that moment taught me a lot about how do we connect with our clients in healthcare, with our patients, with the people that come with them into the scenario, like the family or caregivers. We have a lot to do. And this isn't something you can teach people, but it is something you can identify in people, and it's something that you can model for people. We care for others, and so we have to care for others at the same time.
I love that. When you told me that story, I got the chills because, you know, it's really the connection piece that's so big. And when a person in your position, someone who doesn't have that like feelings towards other people might say, okay, she just wants the answer. She wants the next steps. She wants, you know, she wants things to work out. I'm going to tell her what to do. And really at that point, that was chaotic for you. You had a million running things in your head. That's the last thing you wanted. And it was really the person being present is what's key. And that's what you keep saying. Just show up for your job. I want to hear from you. Could you be more specific when you say show up for the job? And you said it doesn't mean just walk through the door. What does it mean for you to show up for the job?
You know, when you walk into this job, whether you're an RBT, whether you're a BCBA, or whether you're on the administrative team facing clients and families, you're a leader. You are either a leader of that session, you are a leader of that team of people treating the client. And sometimes if you're doing family training or even broader trainings, you're a leader of that group. And a lot of our, I think some of what is lacking in our field is a lack of that feeling of if you're a leader, you need leadership training. You need leadership qualities. And part of that is you don't know everything. I don't know everything. There are still many things I don't know about this job, and I discover more of them every day. And when I don't know something, I reach out and I ask somebody. And then when I deliver it back to the family, I don't give it to them in, you know, a Cooper and Heron language. I give it to them in language that they can understand and digest. You know, I think that these soft skills that kind of come along with being a good leader is something that I wish it were a part of a core sequence. Maybe it is. I don't know. See,
it should be.
Maybe it's in somebody's core sequence. But I think that it's a necessary complementary set of skills to what we learn as clinicians. You know, you need to know those things. You need the certificate. You need to understand how ABA works. And you need to know the terminology. And you need to know how to deliver that in a way where your clients are happy, cared for, and walk away going, okay, that was good. I can do that.
My second surprise word is number. I'm curious because when you say leadership, and I think like the first thing that you said was that you don't have to know every answer. And mm-hmm. I think you like caught many people by surprise because a person can think, what do you mean, a leader? A leader knows all the answers. Could you explain why a leader does not need to know all the answers and why that makes a person a leader when they could own up to what they don't know?
Yeah, it's impossible for all of us to know anything or everything, pardon. And so I think that when you come to a table and every time somebody has a question, you have an answer, people can sort of sense a little bit of like, it's disingenuous, right? So somebody asks you a question, you're like, oh, well, I'll just throw some busy words in there or filler answer just so I seem knowledgeable. So, you know, we can talk about it in behavior analytic terms, why somebody would do that. But when you're thinking about somebody who's just interacting with you and they're seeking information from you and that sense of comfort, that's not really what they need. They want to see you reflect. They want to see you go, oh, I may not know that thing. Let me go search for the answer for that. And, you know, this was something that I learned a lot outside of our field, because I think in our field, knowing all the answers has a high value. And so I spent a lot of time, especially over the last 10 years, the second half of my career, with leaders in other fields, sometimes that are adjacent and sometimes that have nothing to do with healthcare, ABA. I mean, I'm talking about people who like own guitar shops. And I looked at all of the people who I considered to be the best leaders in their thing. Maybe they were selling the most guitars, or maybe they gave the most effective, leadership speeches, and all I saw was, the older I get, the more experience I gain, the less I know from each and every one of those people. And once you kind of accept that and really think about what that means, you start to feel the same way, almost in a certain way. And you start to go, well, yeah, you have the books and that's fine. You can read them, you can spout off the answers, but life is not linear. Life doesn't go exactly as the textbook said it would go, especially in the kind of work that we do. And so for us to pretend that the books that we went to school with hold all the answers for every situation that we encounter is, that's a big thing, you know? And so I started to lean back almost and say, well, what if I didn't have the answer in this complex situation where a child has a severe diagnosis, where maybe there's two parents who have remarried and there's six half siblings, and there is perhaps poverty in the situation, and maybe a parent has been incarcerated. You know, I'm thinking about some of the most complex situations I've walked into professionally. There is no book that's ever going to tell me what to do in that situation. But what I can do is sit back for a second and say, okay, I know where we could start, but let's figure out what the right next step is given all the things going on here. It was almost a relief when I gave myself permission to do something like that. And I feel like it became the clinician I wanted to be, that I set out to be. And so, yeah, you know, I don't know that that answers your question.
But... No, it does, because I think people really like associate like a good leader, I should say, is not someone who sees it, knows it, says commands. A leader is someone who's able. And I really think like your approach is really like, I keep hearing it again and again, is like, take that step back and like, think about it, and think about it, what it's like for them, and think about it, what it's like for you. And when you do that, you're taking control in the situation that you know you'll be able to give your best at it. And that's mm-hmm. what everyone wants from their leader. And mm-hmm. I think realizing that these families, when you're assigned to them, or when you go into their house, they're looking up at you. They came into these services to get your guidance and mm-hmm. to get someone, a good someone who really wants to give it their all and help them. And part of helping is knowing where our setbacks are. And I think that's a huge thing of what you're saying. And it's like the second time I've heard this concept of the more you know and the more you learn from others, you realize how much you don't know. I've heard it from mm-hmm. a very brilliant person once. I don't even remember the context, but I remember her saying, like, the more I know and the more I understand, the more I realize I don't know. And yeah. I think it's so true. I heard it when I was much younger, so like it sounds different to me now, but understanding that helps you be a better leader because you're putting yourself where you belong in the situation. So mm-hmm. I think that's amazing that I keep hearing that, like, take a step back from you. I'm just curious where you built this approach from, of just take a step back, your thinking, your analytics, like, where does it come from?
I mean, some of it's a compounded effect of years of, experience and training. I've been a BCBA for 21 years, but I was really fortunate that I went to Florida State and got to study under Dr. John Bailey. And before that, I did a lot of work in a homeless shelter in Orlando where I grew up. And I saw people at their lowest low. You know, you think about a valley and then you go into the valley of that valley, and these people are looking at you for an answer. And honestly, at that time, I mean, I'm a teenager, right? And I'm doing what I'm told to do as a volunteer. And people are asking you questions. And you almost struggle with, how can I be the person to tell you this answer? I don't know. And I said it a lot back then, but really it was legitimately out of sheer, I don't know, let me go ask somebody, because I'm 17 years old in this volunteer position. So I had some practice in that. And then when I went on to Florida State, and, you know, I had the extreme pleasure, and at the time I did not appreciate this, by the way, you know, studying under Dr. Bailey, I just was like, oh, I'm here at Florida State and I'm in his program. But this is somebody who also modeled professional discipline and at the same time, extreme compassion. And I got to learn that and see that in action all the time and train with that as the core of my professional experience. You know, beyond that, then, you know, again, at the time, this didn't hit me as hard as it hits me now. But then I got to go study under Dr. Jose Martinez Diaz, who really carried that on. And so I had these tremendous mentors, these tremendous leaders in my life who just modeled, you know, the best professional behavior I possibly could have asked for. You know, that along with, you know, all of these other life experiences of seeking out people like them, but in different fields, you know, I kind of just glued it all together and said, if I could be even an approximation of some of these people, I feel like I'll win a little bit professionally. And if I don't know, I'll go ask. You know, I go back to that moment, you know, I was talking about my daughter and her experience, and we go into the hospital in the middle of the night and she has this, you know, I don't know what to do. I'm a young mother. And 99% of the people who have her issue get better really quick and 1% don't. She was in the 1%. And when that 1% happens, kind of no one knows what to do. And the physician that we encountered initially stayed with us for a while and he was like, I'm going to call someone who knows. And he called hospitals all over the country to figure out what do we do next. And that experience stuck with me too. And so when I see these things in other people that I admire that seem to know a lot, that seem to be doing well in their positions, it's just another thing I put in my toolbox to go, okay, this is how I too can be better as a behavior analyst, as somebody running a company, as a mother, quite frankly. How can I continue to do this in a way that's ethical and remain passionate and engaged with my profession?
So I feel like you have that upper hand of having so much life experience, being a mom, especially to a daughter who went through something like that. And you are an experienced BCBA who has other professional experience not in the field. Mm-hmm. I think you know that there are hundreds of BCBAs who are fresh off college, going for their certification, plunging into the field, walking into these homes, who don't have this experience or professional mentoring that you had. So what would you say for them is the biggest thing to tap into, and how would you recommend they tap into it?
I would say, especially if you're in a major metropolitan area, most you know, for us, it's through our Chamber of Commerce, all of these leadership programs that we have here. Go, watch, listen. If there's a talk that they offer from a business leader, you know, I'm really lucky. I live in Cobb County, Georgia, which is a very big county in Atlanta. And our Chamber of Commerce offers, like I was at one earlier today with our former governor talking, you know, and I went and I sat and I listened. What does he have to say about his experiences? How did he do his best job? And I learned a lot. And so I think that BCBAs and other markets, or even if they're here in Atlanta, there are opportunities to listen to other people tell their story. It's going to help you continue to write your story, both your personal and professional story. And you're going to learn some really valuable life skills because you can't possibly be put into all the experiences you're going to need to do your future things. You will be put into an impossible situation. Whoever you are, whatever state or country you work in, you're going to walk into a client's house or they're going to come into your clinic and you're going to go, I do not know how to handle this. And if your response is to them, I know how to handle this, you've lost. You need to be able to say, okay, I wonder if I can help this person. Let me see. And do the hard work of figuring out how to meet them where they're at, instead of turning into the BCBA who's like, here's your vocabulary words and you have to do all the things that I say, because that's not the solution either. You know, there's a happy medium of let's meet each other here in the middle. And so I think that if BCBAs would invest in finding out how to do this thing I keep talking about, you know, I call it like je ne sais quoi.
Okay.
Find out how to do this thing. It really is an investment in yourself, just around your whole life.
Wow. Very well said. You have a very good way of articulating things. I think that was any BCBA who heard that, it's like a whole different, like, oh, so what was I doing? What I've been doing? What should I change? Okay, like it. And I think you said it, like when you gave yourself that permission to like not have to know the answers, it was kind of a relief. And I could feel that of when BCBA is hearing this of like, oh, okay, so let me look at this differently. And you build upon the experiences you bump into, and that's how you become smart. And if you don't give yourself the chance to learn about it, you're just jumping in and doing your best and hoping for the best, then like you said, you lost. And I think that's so important. So thank you for saying it like that. And I know that you're saying you're a mom, you have a lot of responsibilities. I think something that you could offer the BCBAs here about work-life balance, because I know you're very passionate about it. And I think it is a big talk around BCBAs. So I'm curious if you could tap into that topic for a little bit to help BCBAs who are giving it their all and putting their whole life into being a BCBA, supporting these kids, investing, learning, doing everything you set up until now, but then they have a life. So how do I balance it out? My third surprise word is fire.
Balance is a funny word because there are seasons in my life where I have not been able to balance. And I have this conversation frequently with the leadership group I'm in of professional moms. And we often try to think of it like a switchboard, you know, like the ones they use in a recording studio and all the videos from like the 90s. You can't always have everything you want. You have to choose what switches go up and what switches go down. There are times in my life where I've been like, I wonder if my kids know I'm here, because I've been doing something professionally that's very gratifying, but it's also taken my attention away from them. And then there are days where I just have to say, I have to be a mom. You know, for instance, a couple of weeks ago or like a month ago, one of my kids was homecoming queen for her high school. And I had to email the leadership at my company and say, I have to be out for like 48 hours. I've got to throw a party and like dresses and flowers, and I cannot do any work. I can't even answer your texts. I am underwater. I need to leave. And they were like, go do it. Like they kind of were like, why would you even ask? And so, you know, on that day I had to turn the switches down for work. Every day I have to make that decision. And I think the higher up you get, the more that becomes a little bit of pressure. It's welcome pressure. I've chosen this. You know, I could have not chosen this path, and I like it. I like my work. I like my life too. I've stayed committed to time outside of work. I've stayed committed to the things that make me happy. I am a classically trained musician. I make tons of time to engage in that on a daily basis. If I don't, I can quickly tell things are getting a little bit like off kilter. I have a group of female friends that I am very close to that I stay in regular contact with, and they're in all different industries. And sometimes we have periods of like, you know, like communication blackout because they're doing hard work and I'm doing hard work. But other times I'll just send a text and say, hey, have you ever encountered this at work? Or, hey, like, what are you doing next week? And could we go have dinner? And so I think that's really valuable too. And, you know, and then just my family and my kids. I am a mom, I am a wife, and those things are first. And I don't compromise on that. It doesn't mean that I'm there for every single thing, and I don't want to guilt anyone or give you the illusion that I'm at every single game or every single practice, because I'm not. But I love my kids, and the time we spend together is intentional. And I'm there, especially when it counts. My husband has a big job, and we have to kind of sit down and diagram this between the two of us on a weekly basis, but it's what works for us, and we just kind of stick to the system.
Wow. My biggest takeaway is that when you're there, you're there.
And oh, 100%.
I think, and you make it count, like you said. So it's not, and when it's intentional, when you're not there, you're kids know that when you are there, you're there, and that carries them through. And same with your job. When you're there, you're there. And mm-hmm. I think that's very big. And I love how you make time for things. Like people say, make time for what's important. And you know that having classical music in your daily schedule is important, and not to ever make less than not your job, not your kids, not your, you know, things that matter to you is important. And I think people realizing that, and that is something you make time for, you know, and you do that. It sounds like you really set yourself up for success, I have to say.
No, it took me a long time. I don't want to be like, and then I did that when I was 25 or 30 years old. It took me time to learn to build the boundaries around the things that matter. I do say no to things a lot more often now than I used to. You can't say yes to everything. You just cannot. People will come at you at all hours of the day and night, and they will look for your time and they will gobble it up. And so I've got like my handful of friends that get it, my family, work definitely gets my time, and everything else, it's a no. And that's just, it's helped me be better as a person. I'm much more centered as a behavior analyst, as a mother, and as a friend, being able to do that.
You know, it's like when you say no to something, you're saying yes to something else. When you're saying yes to something, you're saying no to something else. And just making sure what you're saying yes and no to are aligned. And, you know, it's an art. It's an art.
It's an art.
Right?
It would be a great behavioral book if somebody would write it.
Go for it. Megan, we're waiting. we'll get it. You are so good with words. You really should write a book. Did you ever think about it?
You know, I've talked about something akin to that with my group of professional ladies, because this is a group I've been very close to for a long time. And together we've kind of come to this place of like, how do you say yes? How do you say no? Some of it comes with age, right? And some of it comes with practice. And some of it is just like you get pushed into a corner one day and you... somebody comes, that last person, bless their heart. That's what we say in the South, bless their heart. They're the last person that comes and asks for your time, and you just lose it. And in that moment, you're going, oh my gosh, I wish I would have said no 4 asks ago, so that I wouldn't have lost it on this poor last person who came to me with an ask. And so, yeah, you know, should I write a book about, maybe let's do it. Yeah.
do it. In your spare time, I know you have a lot, but, this, I don't even want to go further, cause I feel like there's so much takeaways from this short but long conversation, cause there was so much in it. Is there anything you want to leave our listeners off with before we close?
Yeah, I would say, you know, to both RBTs and BCBAs, and even to people who are neither one of those, but in our field as, you know, operators, owners, we have a big job. We have a very important job. The people who work with us, for us, with the families, and the people we serve are the number one most important thing we do. In order to do that right, we have to be our best selves. We have to be good people as well. And so if either one of those things is not adding up, then you need to stop. And you need to say, how do I right this ship?
Well said. Thank you so much, Megan. Thank you for your time. Thank you for your wisdom. And thank you for your clarity, really. So clear. And you feel like, I feel like you're where you are now and how you share it with others is amazing, and we don't take it for granted. So thank you so much, and we are excited to hear what this episode does for our listeners.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.